Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Black Label presents Heavy Montreal, July 28th and 29th, outdoors at Parc Jean Drapeau, featuring Avenged Sevenfold, Rob Zombie, and Marilyn Manson. Festival passes are on sale now. See the full lineup at HeavyMontreal.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. This is the Sean Baker Orchestra with Which Way to Radioland.
Welcome back to another episode of the Talking Metal Podcast. We have three great guests today. the one and only Jeff Pilson, known for his work, of course, with Foreigner, Dokken, Dio, and so many others. Then Michael Devin, who it was great to meet Michael. He is the current bassist in Whitesnake and has been with him quite a while at this point. So we're going to talk to Michael, too. And then last, we're going to hear from Indy. He is the bassist in a band called Doomsday Outlaws. So epic episode here today. I'm joined by my wife, Emily Striegel. How are you, Emily?
Hey.
What a blast it was hanging out with you and Michael Devin and Jeff Pilson at the Foreigner, Whitesnake, Jason Bonham show here in New Jersey at the PNC Arts Center. I had so much fun.
You know, these were both really great interviews, and most of it has to do with the fact that these guys are just top-notch dudes.
Yeah.
And so kind and just good vibes all around.
Absolutely. And you were there with me as I did the interviews. You're not actually a part of the interview, although I do believe at one point in the Michael Devin interview, I like randomly say,
am I laughing?
No, I like randomly address a question to you, like, oh, is that where you recorded with your band?
Oh, right,
or something?
Right. The Hoboken question.
Yeah, I thought of the studio, actually. This will make more sense to the listeners after you hear the interview, but Big Blue Meanie is where
Big
you,
Blue Meanie.
Which
so
was
Madonna,
not Hoboken. It was Weehawken.
It was Weehawken.
Right next
and Madonna
to,
recorded there.
Yeah.
I think, right?
I think like
we need to look
something
up
crazy,
Big Blue
like
Meanie.
I think Like a Virgin or things
yes.
were recorded there. I mean, that was a great studio, and it was also a studio that like really broke a lot of those Jersey emo bands like Thursday and...
Well, Talking Metal listeners might not even know that I was in a band.
Yeah, well, yeah, they might not. They might not. But the Minx.
But the, yeah, my band recorded at a studio in Weehawken, and we were trying to figure out if it was the same one that Michael had recorded at, which it was not.
Yeah. And the Minx, by the way, M-Y-N.
No, don't even stop.
Okay. All right.
Go no further.
Okay. All right. Well,
this is a long time ago.
Okay. I thought you guys
times.
Are great.
No, I love
I thought
the
you guys
Minx,
are great. But... I was going to give you a little plug, but forget it. All right. I won't go any further. So on that note, you know, we think Jeff Pilson and you think, well, the guy in Foreigner, the Jeff Pilson, the producer, producing all these bands. And of course, I think he's mostly always associated with Dokken and Dokken. All those classic Dokken songs that he wrote and co-sang lead on, which is not right. He sang backing, you know, but it was, his voice was a big presence in that band, as well as his songwriting and his bassist and his bass playing. But, you know, we don't really, a lot of times, I don't know, I think sometimes you think of Dio and, you know, you think of Jimmy Bain.
Of course.
You know, and...
Of course.
He kind of overshadows a lot of the other bassists that were in
God.
That band. But
the
but
story Doc, he told...
But,
the story...
Dokken, Jeff Pilson played on some great albums with Dio.
Strange Highways, which I'm a huge fan of and always have been. And I even played it on my solo podcast that I did last year because it's kind of an... I don't know. I think it's an underappreciated
Do you remember
album.
The song you played on
Strange Highways, the title track.
The title track, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll hit a different
which I love.
One off
super
today.
Heavy.
Yeah. And he just wasn't on that record. He was on a lot of Dio records.
Didn't you love the story about how he, I mean, once again to the interview, I was laughing so hard when he talked about, you know, how it came about for him, you know, playing on this album and then the little tidbit of information he provided of what he was having some handyman issues.
The sprinkler. Sprinkler.
That's one of my favorite Talking Metal stories maybe ever because I love Dio so much.
Yeah, Jeff is just such a class
He's such
act.
A nice guy.
And, you know, he played, like I said, he played on a lot of those Dio records, including that last Dio record, which I really loved. And that was, of course, Master of the Moon. We saw that tour, which Jeff didn't do the tour. Rudy Sarzo did the tour, but Jeff is on that record, which is just a great record, Master of the Moon. And, you know, I guess we could do something off of Master of the Moon, but let's go back to the album you mentioned, Strange Highways, because Jeff had more songwriting credits on that record than he did on Master of the Moon. And wow, what a great record that was. I mean, I think Jeff wrote like 90%, co-wrote 90% of the songs on the Strange Highway record. And this is the song.
Was it an awkward time in music?
Yeah.
I think that's why it wasn't as well received as maybe it should have been. It was also very heavy. He'd just come off of Black Sabbath tour, correct?
Well, that sounds right. I mean, he could have. Was it right after Dehumanizer? Because let's see, Strange Highways was like 94-ish, I think.
He was kind of bitter about how things ended, was he not?
Yeah, that was his kind of second go-round with Sabbath. And yeah, that makes total sense because Dehumanizer would have been early 90s, like 92, I believe. So yeah. I mean, I feel like that first Sabbath reunion, you know, I consider Heaven and Hell to be his kind of third reunion with those guys. Not kind of, it was. It just was, they didn't call it Sabbath. But I feel like maybe it didn't go to the place they wanted it to. I think Dehumanizer now, people look back more fondly on it. But at the time, you know, it didn't really, didn't explode. I remember for me personally, it didn't quite give me that feeling that Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell gave me, nowhere even close to be quite honest. Although, you know, I liked a few of the songs. And, you know, in more recent years, since Heaven and Hell became an item over 10 years ago at this point, I really got into that Dehumanizer record. But that's a whole nother Dio conversation. And let's get into a Jeff Pilson conversation with Jeff Pilson. Again, this was recorded at the PNC Arts Center in Homedale, New Jersey on June 30th, 2018. This is, going into the interview, Jesus, Mary, and the Holy Ghost, written by Tracy G, Jeff Pilson, and RJD, Ronnie James Dio, here on Talking Metal.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and we are backstage here at PNC Art Center in New Jersey with the one and only Jeff Pilson. Jeff, always an honor. How are you, man?
I am great, and thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, it's great to be speaking with you again, and the Foreigner Tour is in full effect here. Mick Jones back in the swing with you guys, which is great. And there's been some appearances from other original members.
There have.
So how do the original members kind of vibe with the newer members? I mean, it's
well,
newer
actually
been in the band a long
time.
We
all got along amazingly well, actually. And, you know, it was pretty cool because it was Mick's thought was to, you know, for the 40th anniversary is when we brought the original guys back for a couple shows up in Michigan. They'd also joined us at Jones Beach in New York for a couple of shows. Well, three of them did. I think partly because of the event and the momentousness of the event and just the fact that everybody's cool, it just instantly connected, and they're great guys. And I now have pretty good email and text relationships with
all
of them and ongoing, and it's wonderful.
Cool. And you guys are going to do this big reunion of the original guys out in Sturgis, August.
That's right.
And is that going to be, like, recorded, or is there any plan?
I don't believe so, because we did record the shows that we did in Michigan last October. We recorded and filmed that.
Yeah, okay.
And that's all. That'll probably be released sometime next year.
Okay, cool.
So I doubt if we'd record Sturgis. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be cameras rolling, and there's going to be footage, and there's going to be YouTube and all that. But mostly that's just a, you know, it's kind of better when you don't have all the pressure of a recording and everything.
Yeah.
So I think it's just going to be a fun, wide open show. Going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I wish I could get out there for that.
It's going to be really cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. And you're a guy who just has so much stuff going on all the time, and we only have probably 10 minutes here, so I just wanted to hit upon some of it. Mason, Robert Mason, George Lynch, Mick Brown. I guess it's not, what was it called?
It's not going to be called Superstroke anymore.
Right,
no, we're going to change the name. I can't tell you what the name is, or I'd have to kill you.
Right, okay.
But, but we will be announcing the name probably in January. We do have a name, though, and we have a whole thing planned.
Stuff recorded already for that?
The record's all done.
It's
been recorded. Wow. It's now being mixed.
Okay.
That's going to be a slow process because it's being mixed in Italy, so we have to go back and forth a lot. You know, I mean, not that we're going to travel to Italy,
but because of Frontiers, are they?
It's a Frontiers record,
right? Cool.
But the record came out phenomenal.
Awesome!
I am
so
excited about it. The label's really excited about it. We're going to have a big launch planned for 2019,
right.
And like I say, I'm just ecstatic at how it came out. Probably a little different in some ways than you might think, and then in some ways it's going to be very much what you'd expect. So, but it's a very deep record. There's a lot of stuff on it. So, I mean, we went on some adventures in there. George is playing his butt off. Robert is singing unbelievable.
Yeah.
Everybody's
two of them with Lynch Mob down in Maryland.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
it's pretty,
it was
shocking.
Yeah.
Robert has become just such an amazing frontman now. I mean, he really is. And and he's a great guy, and we just all had a wonderful chemistry. It was one of the more effortless, natural records I've ever done, and that's all you can ask for. That's the best thing you can possibly ask for.
Now, George gets, I guess I'd say, he gets some shit in the press for doing all these bands.
Too many.
Yeah, people say he does too much stuff, and, you know, KXM, like, they never played live and stuff like that. Do you imagine that maybe you guys could get out and do some live stuff?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I mean, that's a big, big goal of ours.
Right.
You know, the reason we can't promise it is because schedules are so tough.
Right.
Especially my schedule with Foreigner is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to schedule other things with that schedule. But having said that, that's a gigantic thing that we have in mind that we plan on doing somehow in 2019 is somehow playing live.
I would think there'd be a big draw. I mean, I would love that because, you know, you'd get the new stuff, but I know you'd get the Dokken classics.
Yeah, I mean, and think of how well we do that stuff,
Lynch Mob song or two.
We'd kick it right in the old butt. So,
yeah.
We really want to do that.
Okay.
We really want to do that. We really want to go to Japan with that, too. So that's a big, I can't say it's a promise.
Right.
But it's a big goal, and it's something that we're going to work very hard to make happen.
Awesome. Again, just some bullet points here. Last in Line.
Yep.
You produced the first record.
Second record. It's not done, but it's about 3/4 of the way done. There's just some vocals.
You did a great
left.
Job with the first record.
Oh, well, thank
by
you.
The way.
And the second record is phenomenal. It's
right.
just phenomenal. Cool. It's about, like I say, I'd say three. There's some vocals left to do, is about all there is, really.
Right.
It's just some vocals. All the guitars and solos and blah, 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 blah are done.
Cool.
And it came, it's just absolutely amazing. It's
great.
It's a really strong record. It's, I mean, I loved the first record, and I'd say, if anything, this one's stronger. So,
right, okay, great.
You know, it's a big thing to say, but I believe it and feel it.
Cool, cool. Again, moving on, Dokken reunion shows. Any, you know, you guys had a brand new song out. Dokken put out a new song.
I know.
Shocked me.
Who would have thought?
It's Another Day, the classic Dokken lineup. Great song. Yeah. Any more songs coming from you guys? Did you do just one, or were there other
ones
recorded?
Well, we only did one, and then we did the two acoustic remakes that we did.
Right, okay.
But, you know, the one was an enjoyable enough experience and painless enough experience that I could see some more happening somewhere down the line.
Right.
I don't know. You know, we get a lot of offers, Dokken does, especially to do shows. I think we'd all love to see it happen. But again, the scheduling thing comes in the way,
right?
I think Don is a little concerned that if he puts too much emphasis on a Dokken reunion, that it's going to make his Dokken suffer. And I understand that.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, that's his thing now. So I get
it. And you're totally fine with that.
I'm totally fine with that. I think it's great. He's got the, you know, that he's. I mean, it's great that we can still do stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
And if we can ever get a chance to do another reunion, it'd be great. We'll see. Again, we get offers. We talk about it. We're all on friendly enough terms that we can talk about these things. I hope. I would like to see it happen at some point. I'd love to do I'd love to do one more record as Dokken with the original lineup, the classic lineup. And I hope that happens. You know, I never thought we'd be talking about it this far along, so...
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah.
It's very possible.
Cool. And but I think there's a demand and a market for a full-out reunion in the States for you guys. A tour,
I think there is, too. Well,
you know,
sure.
You guys did the Japan shows, and there was, what, one show in the States or something?
One show
like
in
that.
The States. Yeah, it was our warm-up
show. I'd love
show.
To have you come to New York or New Jersey. That would be amazing.
We would love to do that, too. I mean, again, I don't think it's at all impossible. It's just tough because of schedules, once again, because that would require probably even more of a commitment than doing stuff with George and Robert and Mick. So so that's why it's so hard to put a date on it or any kind of a commitment. But having said that, I would love to see it happen, so you never know.
Awesome. We hope so. The Strange Highway record album by Dio, 25 years this year. Almost 25 years old at this point.
It blows my mind.
Any memories that jump out about recording and making this record 25
years ago?
Well,
the whole
ago?
Thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was a very magical experience. You know, from the day that Vinny and Ronnie showed up at my door because Jimmy kind of went AWOL on them. And they literally showed up at my door. They were rehearsing down the street. And they literally showed up at my door.
Wow.
And they said, hey, how you doing, man? We're rehearsing down the street. And we just want to come by and say, you know of anybody that would, you know, want to play because, you know, we can't find Jimmy. And I said, I would.
Right, right.
They said, really? I said, yeah. And I said, there's one problem. My sprinklers aren't working. And so, and you know, I'm like the least handy man in the universe.
Right.
And Vinny is the most handy man in the universe. Ronnie probably second.
Right.
So they said, well, where's your box? And I said, so Vinny and Ronnie went in my backyard. Yeah. And fix my sprinklers in about 15 minutes. And then they go, okay, ready to jam?
Yeah. it's great.
So, and that's how it all started. And it was just an amazing process from then on.
Thank you.
It was such a wonderful record to make. And, I mean, the jamming that we did to come up with the songs and the feeling. I mean, it was just a really magical period. And Ronnie was in such a great headspace. It was wonderful.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And, you know, Mick Jones has produced some pretty big records.
Yeah,
Van Halen, Billy Joel. You're a producer. You've done Warren, Kill Devil Hill, and Last in Line. I'm probably missing other big ones, but
None quite on the level of Billy Joel or Van Halen.
Right. Do you guys ever talk about being a producer? Do you guys
have? Of course.
Have,
yeah, and you don't think I've picked his brain every chance I can possibly get? Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm actually any chance I'm in the studio with Mick, I try and be a sponge as much as I can. He's, you know, and the other thing too is he's actually really cool when he's in the studio and he knows that I'm quote unquote the producer.
Right.
He defers to me, which is which is a pretty big thing for him to do. Does he show his say his opinion? Of course.
Right.
And does he guide things along? Of course. But it, you know, when if I have something set that has to be done or whatever, he's very, very good about letting me do it, and he's very respectful of that. But every possible chance I get, I try and watch him, pick his brain. You know, like if we're recording a vocal with Kelly, he's really good with vocals. I mean, he is so spectacular with vocals and what he gets out of a singer. And I watch every second of that, you know, like I'm watching the last movie I'll ever see on Earth. So, I've learned a lot from Mick and hope I continue to.
Cool. Two short questions and then we'll wrap it up. Anyone else you're currently producing in the studio besides Last in Line? You working with anybody else right now you could tell us about?
Well, there is a pop record that I'm doing with an artist called Angel, who is from right around here. We're going to try and release that in September. And the name of the record is Life's a Celebration and You're Already There.
Cool.
The first song is called Life's a Celebration. And it's very pop, though. It has nothing to do with my rock side.
Right.
Far as other rock artists, I have another project that I'm just starting to talk about. And I can't really say who's involved yet because nobody's confirmed except one guy, and I'm not going to say it. So,
okay. All right.
So, but yeah, there are more projects coming. I really want to finish Last in Line and finish the project with George, Mick, and Robert.
Yeah.
And again, musically, George, Mick, and Robert and I are done. So now that's just a question of the promotion side. And, you know, we just did a photo shoot. So there's lots of great stuff coming. I have to take it a little bit easy before I start in this other project.
Okay.
I got to finish other stuff first.
One thing at a time. And, you know, I just grew up being such a massive Dokken fan. And really love the 80s era records, every one of them. What are some of your what's your favorite Dokken album from back in the day?
Oh, favorite Dokken album is unquestionably Tooth and Nail.
Yeah.
But that's probably partly for the feelings and nostalgia that I have for the whole process. It was a very amazing process. You know, I mean, I had just joined the band, really.
Yeah.
And they gave me so much responsibility right away. I mean, you know, the first conversation they ever had with me is they said, we want to encourage you to write as much as you can and be as involved as you can. And you know, considering we're not talking about small egos here.
Right. Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. I was like, wow, they really do want to see the big picture. You know, everybody did, Don included. And when we got into the studio, I did end up getting a lot of the responsibilities. I did end up kind of producing a lot of Don's vocals on Tooth and Nail. And I thought, wow, this is really bizarre. I'm just joining the band, but they're letting me do this. But
yeah,
it worked.
Right, absolutely.
And you know, Tooth and Nail, I mean, the writing process, there was that month. I literally lived at George's house for a month, and we just wrote a lot of the music for that and some of the full songs. And it was, I mean, he and I had already really bonded because we roomed together on the road for most of the Break in the Chains tour.
Yeah.
And started writing together, like, right away. So we already had a chemistry, but you spend an intense month like that, and it gets really intense. And it's going to last a lifetime.
Yeah,
I mean, he and I have a bond that I know will never break in any way.
Awesome.
So that's one of the reasons I have such a great feeling about that record.
Absolutely. Cool. Jeff, as always, thank you for spending some time with us before your gig here at the PNC Arts Center in Homedale, New Jersey. Cannot wait to see Foreigner tonight.
It's going
to
be a great show.
Cool.
It's going to be really fun.
Everybody needs to get out to this this tour. What a bill. Jason Bonham doing Zeppelin, Whitesnake, classic Whitesnake, and classic Foreigner stuff.
For one thing, you know, obviously Jason set, you know, Led Zeppelin, how can you go wrong?
Right.
Whitesnake, I mean, my God, every song they play is just a great song.
Yeah.
And I got to say, we're pretty on our game. So
yeah, I peeked at the set list, and I was like, oh,
well,
man.
And when did you see the show? We're kicking some butt. So,
yeah, cool.
this is an amazing tour. I'm not only honored to be part of it, but I really am proud of it and really do hope a lot of people can come and see it because it's the best thing we've ever done.
Cool. And you're about, 3 weeks into the tour at this point? And
another 6 weeks? Time questions. Yeah. Oh, my God. Something like that.
Yeah.
Actually, it's just a little over 2 weeks.
Two weeks, okay.
It's going great, and I'm just really excited. And thank you for interviewing me, and nice to see you guys.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks, Jeff.
All right.
Turn On the Action by Dokken.
Yeah, great, great record. Great song. I love every song on that record. And cool to hear that Jeff has such fond memories of that record, too.
I actually posted about Dokken on Facebook tonight. You probably haven't seen it yet.
I did see it. I see everything you post.
Oh, God. Stalker.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, yeah, we were, it made me feel a little bit bad because here I went and spent $80 on fireworks today and Emily was commenting on public forum that my firework display for four kids ages, you know, 7 through 9 and two adults, the two different moms, Emily being one of them, was, what did you call it? Mediocre.
Yeah. You know what?
Sorry.
No, I loved it. You don't understand. Mediocre is not a bad word when it comes to fireworks.
Okay.
I don't need a big display. I like a mediocre firework display in a driveway. And I said it made me want to slow dance to Dokken because it just, it's like these memories of like, I don't know, adolescence.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind
absolutely
of like bad fireworks and slow dancing to Dokken?
Yeah. Brings you back. Definitely. You couldn't slow dance to that song we just heard, though. Turn on the action. That's a heavy.
I'm thinking like Alone Again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. So let's keep things moving here. This is Creature Feature by From the Earth. And this is, I guess, a project. We clarify that with Michael. A project that Michael is involved with. And wow, this guy has quite a voice on him. And did you notice during the Whitesnake set, I mean, how much of the stuff he was singing along with David? I mean, sometimes David even pointed over at him and he'd take a line of lead here and there.
Absolutely.
You know, lead vocals.
He's got a great voice. Yeah, David had a lot of support, vocal support.
Yeah.
He still got it, but yeah, he has a lot of good voices on stage to help him out.
Absolutely. Needed. And, you know, before we get into this interview and this song, we're going to hear Creature Feature by From the Earth featuring Michael Devon. But before we do, two big special thanks to Michael Regan, who I hadn't emailed in like 5 or 6 years, and I sent him an email just thinking maybe he could hook up a Pilsen interview since he had done that for me before. The guy emails me back immediately and within 24 hours sets up an interview for us with Jeff backstage at the Foreigner Whitesnake Jason Bonham show. So big props to you, Michael, for setting
totally.
Up
Thank
the,
you.
The interview. And it's Michael Regan, not Michael Reagan. Michael Regan, I clarified that with him. Great dude. He helps Jeff out with some of his web stuff, you know, social media and whatnot. At least that's what Jeff told us. So
yeah.
And also to one of my oldest buddies, Rob Bailey, a guy who I've known since I was 17 years old, my neighbor at Berklee College of Music in the fall of 1987 and the spring of 1988, a guy who really, I remember him taking me under his wing and showing me the modes and helping me
He's
with some guitar
dude.
Stuff.
He's a
and,
good dude.
And then my roommate's girlfriend would come up, like it felt like every other weekend, and Rob's roommate that year would go home a lot on the weekends. So I would
let you
I would have to go into Rob's room. It happened at least 3 times because
to give your roommate some privacy.
Yeah, to give my roommate some privacy, which was cool because I got to hang with Rob and Rob was such a great dude. And, you know, I lost contact with him for a number of years. And then he came up to me in Manny's Music one day. I was in there on my lunch break and I almost didn't recognize him because he used to have the big hair and stuff back in the
I've
day.
Seen
and
pictures.
And he, you know, he had a little hat on and it had a different look, you know, 10, 15 years later. Again, we lost contact in that time frame, but then, you know, we reconnected. I mean, that had to be, I'm thinking back, that was like when I was at, that had to be like 2004
right.
or something when I reconnected with Rob. So anyways, great.
And now
dude.
He's killing it with Mule Kick with Frank Ferrer.
Yes. Yeah.
And that whole, it's all very incestuous. Like everyone knows everyone in this music scene in New York City.
Yep. Absolutely. And we get into that a little bit with Michael Devon in this interview. So without further ado, let's get into the interview with Michael Devon. This is Creature Feature by From the Earth. Check From the Earth out on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon. You will not be disappointed. I mean, listen to this song. This is just, I love this song. Creature Feature by From the Earth, followed by my interview with Michael Devon, and Emily was sitting right next to me through both of these interviews today. So yeah, check it out.
Thank you.
Dude, is that Tommy Bolin on your shirt? Wow, yeah, it's a great shirt.
Thanks. Check one. It's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and we are here backstage at PNC with the bassist of Whitesnake, Michael Devin. Michael, thanks for taking some time to talk with us today.
Absolutely, Mark. Thanks for inviting me on to the program.
You bet. And listen, I was listening to your brand new EP, From the Earth.
Yes.
Is it a project or band? Should I refer to it as like the From the Earth project?
I suppose at this point you could refer to it as a project, because okay. I don't actually have a lineup yet.
Okay.
But and the players who have played on it, you know, I've kind of pulled from all over the place. So.
It sounds great, man.
Thank you, man.
I've really, truly enjoyed it. Diversity to it, but you know, some heavy riffs, some heavy rock, kind of old school feel, if you will.
Yes.
And two EPs, I guess, that are coming out. And the first one's currently out.
Yeah, the first one's currently out, and then the second EP will drop sometime late summer, early fall, somewhere in there. Right before it starts to snow and get too cold and miserable.
right on. Why not do one full length as opposed to two EPs?
Well, because I felt like it would be more beneficial, I guess, to kind of build a little combustion and let people absorb it in smaller doses than one big album.
Right, okay.
You know,
right.
It was kind of a, I don't know if you would want to call it a strategy or something, because I'm not very, you know, strategic in this way, but I just thought, you know what, half and half, and I was going back and forth with it for a while, and I just thought, well, this might be the wiser way, because I don't have a label who is out there, you know, pumping it and distributing it and doing all the advertising. So
cool. Well, we encourage all the listeners to check it out. Again, I listen to it on Spotify, it's on Amazon, it's on iTunes. From the Earth with Michael Devin of Whitesnake, and let's talk about the vocals on this. I'm assuming this is you singing.
Yes,
yeah,
that is
great voice. I said to Emily when I was listening to it, wow, this guy can really sing. So
thanks, man.
Yeah.
I came to the party a little later in life as a singer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was you know, I mean, and I'm a bassist, so I was kind of innately sort of shy and preferred to be, you know, outside of the spotlight, so to speak.
Right.
And singers traditionally have to be front center, and you know,
yeah.
Even though I knew that I had a singer living inside of me, I wouldn't let him out. You know what I mean? For a long time. But.
Right on. And the EP, it has such a warm feel to it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk to you how you go about getting that feel. Is it the studios you recorded in? Is it?
Yeah.
Did you record analog? How, fill us in a little bit about where and how this was recorded.
Well, it's sort of, I kind of call it the, you know, the suitcase record, because I feel like I made it out of a suitcase. It was always, I was always going somewhere to get another piece of it, whether it was if I wanted somebody to lay a guitar track over it, or if I wanted to get a violin, like on Moon Queen or what have you. But most of it was done either at 606 Studios in Los Angeles,
which is Dave Grohl's.
Yeah, the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they all. Yeah. That's their whole. That's their clubhouse and
everything.
And you know, that's a candy store. It's got everything you could ever imagine or want in there, and so that provides a very warm sound. A lot of tubes burning in there. You know? And then
now, does that studio have the board from Sound City?
Yes, it does, and it has a lot of gear from Sound City. A lot of stuff that a lot of artifacts he grabbed. You know, which is so cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But I have a bit of a. Concept in my mind and in my heart, and that's kind of trying to make music that's big and heavy, but without all of the overdubs, overlays, you know, multi-tracked guitars and stack.
Right.
You know? It seems to be the newfangled way of making records in the past, you know, decade or two. People just want to stack it, make it big, compress the hell out of it, and there's your single, you know.
Right.
I kind of wanted to avoid that. I like the sound of bands that sound a lot heavier in my mind than they do when I press play. A band like Free, let's say, Paul Rodgers or something like that. You know, even AC/DC. If I'm critical about their records, they're not you know, overpowering. They're very simple, and the guitar tones, all that, but. When I think of it, it's huge.
Right, yeah.
So it's sort of like allowing the imagination to fill up that headroom, if you will, you know. And I think that our minds will do that regardless if we like hard rock music. You don't have to compress it for me. I can imagine that it's big. And that's kind of what I was doing with this stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And let's talk about some of the guests that join you on the record.
Yeah.
How about... There's some drums. Who's handling the drums?
There's a few different guys. There's Stephen Perkins from Jane's Addiction. He's on a few tracks. And then Brian Tishy, old friend, old Jersey guy.
Yeah.
He's on a couple of tracks. And then who else is on there? There's a young guy by the name of Russell Holtzman who's out of Jersey, New York area. I don't know, he's 22 or 23, and I got in a studio with him in New Jersey in Hoboken with my friend and producer Warren Riker, who produced a lot of stuff. You can look him up. He produced like the Down Records, Fuji's.
This is Water Studio?
Yes,
is
that,
at
Water
Music.
Is that
where you recorded? Did you record it? Oh, that was up in Weehawken. Never mind.
Okay. Hoboken. It was...
Now, is that Lenny Kravitz's old studio? Or that's a different place?
Nope, that's a different place,
wow,
too.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Right. This place had, you know, at the 6-foot mark, it had the watermarks, literally, ironically, called Water Music, because it was basically submerged in that sewage water from the floods from a hurricane...
Sandy.
Yeah. So the board, they took, you know, they basically left the chassis, but they took... all of the pre's out, everything out of the board, and then when the storm passed, they went in and, you know, vacuumed it all up, cleaned the place up, and put everything back in. There's ghosts in that.
Wow.
In that board, man. A lot of quirky stuff happening with that thing. It was like it was like watching Warren Riker, you know, kind of drive the Millennium Falcon, you know, like he's banging on shit, you know, he's just trying to get the thing to work half the time, and then when it would work, it was like, yes, you know. But you know, and The music and the whole thing was a labor of love for me, because like I say, like all the resources are coming from me. They're not coming from anywhere else. You know what I mean?
Right.
Except I do have a friend John who's helped out on some of it. But you know, it's like one of those things. You kind of get in the trenches with people, and you know, the guys who have played on it, like Russell and Warren. There's another kid, a young kid named Nick. Nicola Wincents, guitarist, plays in a band with Russell. Okay. Warren produced them. That's how I met them. And he said, you should just, you know, bring your tunes in and have these guys have a go at a song or two. So there's a song on the record called Creature Feature that...
We actually heard that earlier in the podcast coming into the interview.
Sweet! Yeah. That one was cut live right on the floor and kind of written on my way, you know, from the bedroom to the studio. While we were warming things up, I was like, you know, I knew I had a couple of guys, like, and we could, you know, we could cut right there. So
cool.
Yeah, we went there with it. But
excellent.
Jesse Green plays violin. She plays with Pink now. She's a really phenomenal player, violinist, and musician. And who else? My friend Jay Monzart from he's a guy I grew up with. He played guitar on a bunch of it. Our mutual friend Rob Bailey played guitar on a couple tracks, although those tracks are not on this release. But
maybe the next one.
Possibly, yeah, okay. But I'm going to get him to play on other things too. I just think he's great.
Yeah, really great guy. And where do you know Rob Bailey from?
Rob Bailey comes from the world of Brian Tichy and the Jersey, New York, Boston, Berkeley circles.
Yeah.
So when I moved to LA, I met Brian pretty early on and joined his band. He had a band called Ball. With Joe Travers, who's also from Berkeley.
Okay.
Joe's a phenomenal drummer. And through those guys, I met, you know, people like Dorian Hartsong, who's out here playing bass with Jason Bonham. He was a Berkeley guy.
Okay.
Rob Bailey. Rob and Dorian are really, really close friends. Cool. Yeah, all those cats. Rich Monica, John DeServio.
Yeah. Who's in Black Label Society.
Yeah, he's in Black Label, you know.
JD. JD. Is what we used to call him.
Well, that's
Berkeley.
What his name is, JD. Yeah. But, those cats. That's how I met Rob, through all of that affiliation. But
Cool. And you mentioned Jason Bonham, who's on this tour with you guys. You played with Jason for a while, right?
Yes. In fact, it's a little bit of a deja vu going on, because I did this run last year.
Oh, wow.
But instead of being in the middle band, I was in the opening band. Cheap Trick was with us last year.
Oh, okay. So you were recently you were playing.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
we saw Jason at the Wellmont in Montclair. I don't know if you remember. This was like 2-3 years ago.
That was probably not me.
That was not you.
No,
okay.
That would have been.
Because we saw Whitesnake at the same venue.
Yeah.
And that was definitely you. That was probably like 2 years ago.
Yeah, that was not me. I came out last summer because Dorian, he you know, had some personal stuff going on. And so I had the time. I had the time open.
Right.
And it had been, 7 years? I first joined in 2010 with Jason, right when he put it together.
Okay.
So at its inception, I was there. And then when I got with Whitesnake, I pulled in Dorian because I knew he's a Zep head like me, and I knew he would nail it. And he's still here. And, you know, it's awesome to see that, you know.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And you've played with Lynch Mob, Kenny Wayne,
George, George Lynch, Wayne.
Yeah, we'll start with Lynch Mob. When were you playing with them?
George, man, I just did shows with George a couple months ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Like where? You,
yeah, man. Well,
I saw him at M3 recently down in Maryland.
I wasn't there, but we did Rocklahoma.
Ah, okay.
With him,
okay.
And I did what else did I do? I did something in California up in his neck of the woods, like Santa Clarita area.
Ah, right.
And with Scott Coogan on drums, who. Is another
Freddy.
Old yeah, yeah, and he's another old friend of mine that we go back.
Wow,
we go back years, man. He was in a band with we were in a band together in like 99 or 2000, right when I moved to LA.
Really? Wow.
Coogan, real talented dude.
Great,
out of his
great pipes on that guy.
Out of
too,
his fucking mind, though. Yeah. Like I love him. He's a madman. But that's a fun gig, you know. I love playing with George. I'll always play with George anytime he needs. I just think he's a really special person and mind. I like George's brain. Yeah. Yeah.
What about Kenny Wayne Shepherd? When did you play with him?
Kenny, he's a good Southern gentleman, that guy. And you know, I always have mad respect and appreciation for him because you know, he gave me a chance when he didn't have to, you know what I'm saying? So that was in 2004, four, somewhere in there.
Right.
And that was like my first real, you know, proper tour bus tour. And
really cool.
Yeah, that was like, and me seeing the countryside and that whole thing, and right. getting endorsements, and was a very exciting time, you know. But God bless him, but it's like he had such a rocker in the band. It was like all I could do to, you know, not you know, contain myself, you know what I mean? I was so thirsty to play hard rock. But he kind of rides that wave, you know.
It's, yeah.
It rocks. And he was putting out a record at that time called The Place You're In, which had more of a rock slant to it. It was produced by Marty Fredrickson. So it had more of a pop rock kind of an element to it. But yeah, I just saw Noah Hunt, his singer, two nights ago when we played Cincinnati.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about Whitesnake. You guys had the Purple record out.
The Purple album.
And then it's been a number of years since an album of original material. I think we're going back to 2011.
Yeah, man.
Right.
11 for the Forevermore album.
Forevermore, correct.
Yeah, that was my first record with them.
Yeah. Yeah, great record. Yeah. And what can we expect with the next record? Because it sounds like, is it done? I mean, it sounds like it was done, but there was a technical problem or something.
Yes, there was quite a technical issue going on with that record that is done. It's in the can. Creatively, it's done. It just needs, at this point, a proper mixing.
Okay.
That's pretty much where it's at right now.
Because we even got a report, I think, from David that there was a music video shot, which that was going back like to March, and we still haven't seen that. So I guess
that hasn't been released yet.
I don't know. I don't think so.
I should know that, huh?
Yeah. I should know that doing the interview, but yeah. I don't think so. If it has,
You know what? It has not, or it's about to very recently, because now you've just jarred my memory that I just watched two different versions of the single of the video. So that'll be dropping
real soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the record will drop. I'm not sure when, but we are planning on doing a big tour for it for next year, like a proper world tour.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. And how has this record differed? I guess there's different songwriters involved this time. Obviously, Doug isn't with you guys anymore.
No.
Is it a different sound, do you think? Do you think you're going in a different direction with it?
Yes, I definitely think it's a different sound.
And yeah.
It's definitely going in a different direction, for sure.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, different writers bring, as you know, you're a songwriter.
Right.
Different writers bring a different palette, and we've all got our influences we draw upon. And I would say that it's still, an essential Whitesnake record, because it has all of those essential ingredients. You know, it's got some, you know, muscular guitars and driving kind of tunes, but I think some of the melodic sensibilities are different on this record than on the previous record of original music, for sure.
Cool.
Because I just think there's more of a there's more of a relationship between the two guitarists in this band now, where that didn't really exist in the last lineup,
right.
At all.
Okay.
So now Joel and Reb have communication, and they're both creative, and that's the beauty about them as guitar players. They're not, they obviously have chops. I mean, Joel has some pretty sick chops that you watch and you go, God damn, it's up there.
Right, yeah.
But he plays for the song, which I love about him. Like, he will just hit open chords and not worry about it.
Right. Right.
You know, there's a lot to be said about a musician like that, you know.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Well, we cannot wait to hear that. And I know you got a show coming up, so we're not going to keep
you
much longer.
Yeah, we're going to rock it tonight, man. Rock it in the dirty jurors, as they say. All my
Where
friends.
Where are you from originally?
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm a fucking masshole. As they say, can I swear on your podcast?
Oh, yeah,
I'm
absolutely.
Sorry.
Please do.
But yeah, I'm a masshole. And there's a bus full of massholes up front right now. Some of my family are here.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, man, born and raised right outside of Worcester County.
Right.
So what's up, all you people out of Worcester?
In Worcester.
Oh yeah, the Centrum.
At the Centrum.
Yeah, you did.
I think that's the only show I've seen in Worcester. And our son has been taking some banjo lessons.
Nice, dude.
And his teacher quit on us. So, and the guy was great too. So we're bummed. I was hoping you lived in New York, because I was going to say, can I hire you to give Harrison some banjo lessons?
I wish. I got three. He probably plays better than I do. I could probably hire him from some work.
Oh, yeah. All right, cool.
Yeah, man.
Cool. Well, Michael, thank you so
thank
much
you,
for
Mark.
Your time.
Thanks,
have a great
dude.
Show tonight.
Thank you very much, man.
Okay.
Set You Free by Whitesnake. Great stuff. Thanks to Michael Devon for joining us on Talking Metal. Go support him by purchasing From the Earth, the EP. We heard a song earlier in the show, Creature Feature by From the Earth, featuring Michael Devon. Go buy that song or go buy the whole EP. If you do Spotify, just at least go listen to it on Spotify. There you go. We're going to round things out today with an interview I recorded a while ago. I apologize, Indy. It took me so long to get this interview up. It is Indy from the band Doomsday Outlaw, and they got some good rock and roll going with this. So without further ado, this is off the Hard Times album by Doomsday Outlaw, and it's called Over and Over, and then we'll go right into the interview from there.
Oh, Hey, it's Mark Striegel. We have Indy Chanda for On the Line, the bassist of Doomsday Outlaw. And Indy, thanks for this great new record, Hard Times. Welcome to Talking Metal.
Brilliant. No, thanks for having us.
Awesome. Cool. And you guys are doing these big riffs, these grooves in the songs, and just great hooks. We just heard the song over and over. Let's talk a little bit about the history of the band for the listeners who may know nothing about you. Where are you guys from, and how long have you been around? How did this whole thing come about?
Okay, so we're from like the middle of England, based mainly around Derby, which is bang in the middle of the city, bang in the middle of the country. There's not very much there, really. A lot of countryside, and Rolls Royce manufacturing, and that's it.
Right.
So we've been together in this lineup 2.5 years. Kind of went through various lineups, but that was when we got our vocalist on board. Having gone through a couple of singers that weren't working out. But as soon as Phil walked in and started doing his stuff in our first rehearsal, we knew we'd found the guy that we needed. And we put out an album 2 years ago that we did ourselves, which we spent as much time and effort as we could because we wanted to put a proper product out instead of just a demo. And that immediately saw us get picked up by Frontiers. I mean, literally, we got a message the day the album was released because Mario from the label had seen some of the reviews and contacted us straight away. And it's kind of been a bit of a whirlwind ride since then because we weren't aiming to get signed. We're kind of learning as we go along, but it's going well.
Awesome. And musically, where do you guys pull your influences from? Because I hear a lot of, you know, old school influences like obviously Zeppelin and the classic rock stuff. But I also hear, like, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like I could almost hear like a Audioslave fan digging what you're doing. Where do you think you guys fit in and where are you pulling your influences from?
I mean, we all listen to loads of different stuff. I mean, we kind of cross over when it comes to things like you say, the kind of the Led Zeppelins and the early Black Sabbath and things. We also are listening to like the more modern stuff like Alter Bridge I was going to say Soundgarden, which probably probably isn't that modern nowadays, but you know what I mean. But then on top of that, we're all listening to there's almost a hint of Funkadelic in the breakdown of some of the songs. And we're traveling to Newcastle now. We've just been getting some Elton John on, some classic songwriting, because everything's about the songs at the end of the day. We've got a mix of Elton John and Motown on the way here from Edinburgh. It's been great.
Right.
But, I mean, the way it works is that Steve will come to the rehearsal with an idea for a song, and then everyone just jams what they feel happy with. So what you end up with is, you know, even if Steve might have had an idea in his head, by the time it comes out the other side, it's got, you know, a little bit of Creedence in it, a bit of Zeppelin, a bit of Marvin Gaye, just whatever people think fits, and we try until it works.
Right on. And then, you know, the riffs are in your face, they're heavy, they're big, big grooves, big hooks. And, you know, you mentioned Elton John. One of the songs that really jumped out on me was actually a softer song on the record with some piano, Into the Light. Any story or memories of that song coming about?
I mean, Into the Light is 100% Phil's work from start to finish. He came in and said, yeah, we want to do something that's kind of gives the album a little more texture, a bit of a different sound. So he plays piano on it. He obviously writes and sung all the lyrics. That's all Phil. And I think on that song particularly, you get an idea of what Phil does with all his songs, which is, yeah, he doesn't write generic lyrics. He's not about kind of fist in the air like you just don't care and all that. He's everything he does is quite personal, and I think that's why. That's why the songs are kind of resonating with people, because they can tell that there's actually something behind it. There's real emotion, and what he's singing about is, you know, means something to him. And hopefully that then connects with people so they can put their own meaning on it and take something away from it. And on a song like Into the Light, that's so stripped bare that that whole ethic really comes through.
Absolutely.
But it's the same for all the songs.
Yeah, absolutely. And where did you guys first find Phil?
On the internet.
Wow.
Amazingly. I said we had to kick out the singer before, and you know, I remember saying to the lads that we're yeah, obviously the singer is a focal point for your band, and if that's not right, it's not right, which is why we found ourselves in the position we were in. I remember saying to the lads, you know, we could be searching for months, if not years, to find the right person to kind of put their stamp on the music that we're making. But literally 2 weeks later, I'd put some adverts up on various musician sites, and Phil sounded promising, so we got him down for rehearsal, and he was singing songs on he was singing some of the songs that we'd already released. So we got that kind of benchmark in our head of how they'd been sounding up until that point. As soon as he opened his mouth and started wailing on them, you could just see John behind the kit. I remember just like a massive, massive grin on his face. He was like, this is working. So yeah, and he lives not far from the rest of the lads in Derby, and so it all kind of worked out. Yeah,
I was going to say, did you have to bring him in from anywhere, knowing that you found him on the internet? But that's amazing that he was somewhat local.
Yes, yeah. I mean, we're not kind of, like I said, most of the lads are based in Derby. I'm in Sheffield, home of Def Leppard, which is like an hour's drive from Derby. And we're kind of a little bit spread out, but not too much. So we're kind of already kind of prepared for the fact that even though Phil doesn't live in the same postcode or zip code, we knew that if a bit of travelling is what's needed to get the right person in, then that's what we'll do. And it's worked out beautifully.
So what's the plan moving forward? You know, it's so hard for new bands to get traction nowadays. That's why I said to the PR guy, I got to get these guys on. We got to introduce them to our listening audience. But what is, like, how hard is it going to be for you guys to break through? It just seems like there's such a real hard it's a hard thing to do for bands to break through to people nowadays, especially when there's not a big budget behind them. Do you have a plan in place as to what you're going to do as far as touring and promoting?
Yeah, I mean, we're working on, like I said, we're kind of making this up as we go along to a certain extent. And you know, as when we got signed, the first thing we did was we sat down and we said, you know, let's get some goals, some solid goals of things that we want to do, make them as ambitious and ridiculous as you want. And we'll see how far we get. And the first thing I did when we got signed was I signed up to a course on how to manage an artist, and kind of learned some stuff there, made some contacts, and we've took it from there. Been booking shows. We're on a month-long trek with Jizzy Pearl as we speak. That's who we're playing with tonight. So playing all the classic Love Hate.
Yeah.
So we've got that, and then in August we're out with Graham Bonnet from Rainbow.
Nice.
And also we're starting to get on some of the bigger festivals. So we're playing Bloodstock Festival. So I don't know if that's well known in America or not.
It's definitely.
So it's pretty big. So we're on there. We're on there with the likes of Gojira and Judas Priest and Mr. Big are playing. We're kind of just feeling our way, really, kind of taking any opportunities that come and seeing what happens.
Do you think you'll be able to get over to North America? Is North America possible?
We'd love to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been over to America quite a few times for holidays and things, and I always try and catch a band, and sometimes we went over specifically for a show. I went over for the Kiss and Aerosmith co-headline, whenever that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Blackstone Cherry in Vegas, Van Halen in Madison Square Garden. So
I was there.
Yeah, I'm kind of came over specifically for those shows, because I think the American gigs are quite different to British gigs.
Right.
I'd love to get over there and kind of be on the other side of the barrier. Yeah.
Cool. Well, the best of luck to you. And again, the new record is Hard Times, out through Frontiers Music. And the stuff just sounds great. I really hope you can catch a wave and ride this stuff and get it out there to the masses.
Thanks, mate. Everything like this really helps to do that. So, yeah, we're very appreciative.
Listen to my delivery.
That Made Me by Doomsday Outlaw. That's going to do it for today's show. Guys, support us on Patreon. Please hook up with us there. Go to our website, talkingrock.net or talkingmetal.com. What else? You can check Emily out on social media. Where's the best place to check you out, Emily?
Space.pony on Instagram.
Yep.
And Emily Striegel on Twitter.
Cool. And we're going to be heading up to Heavy Montreal very soon. Emily's going to be doing a bunch of interviews up there. I'm going to be
doing. Are we
going to
be running around on our own? Are we taking a bunch of mics? Are we doing.
We're going to have numerous things going on in case that has to happen. But we're going to be shooting video, recording audio, doing podcasts. I'm going to go up there a day early for the punk rock festival, which is called 77 Montreal. I got to do a little research on who's playing there.
What about the dumplings? I just need time for dumplings.
Right, the dumplings, of course. Of course. If you missed Emily's interview with the bassist.
Paolo from Trivium.
Yeah, it was a few episodes ago.
We talked about the food. About the food at Heavy Montreal.
Rabbit burgers.
Hell yeah.
I ate a rabbit burger last time.
Oh, God. I don't even want to hear that. I don't want to hear about rabbit burgers, but ate veggie dumplings.
Yeah, very good. Cool. And on that note, we will check out, again, please support, use the Amazon links, PayPal donations, Patreon, join us there, buy a t-shirt from me on PayPal, or on, you know, just send me $20 through PayPal, your shirt size and whatnot, and I'll get that out to you. All right, cool, guys, and all that info, the Patreon, the PayPal, is listed in today's show notes. Just about any blog, Talking Metal blog post on talkingmetal.com. You can get all that info you need for supporting what we do here. At the very least, leave us a review on iTunes. Cool, we'll talk to you next time. Thank you.
Coors Light presents Heavy Montreal, July 28th and 29th, outdoors at Parc Jean Drapeau, featuring Avenged Sevenfold, Rob Zombie, and Marilyn Manson. A weekend of hard rock and metal with Gojira, Emperor, Under Oath, Hollywood Undead, and many more. Festival passes are on sale now. See the full lineup at HeavyMontreal.com. Produced by Evenco.
Have you ever wondered how to say good morning in Italian? Or what is goodbye in French? You can ask Alexa. Just say, what is happy birthday in German? Or how do you say hello in Japanese? Do you want to know how to say I love you in Spanish? Ask Alexa and start learning a new language today.